Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning or good afternoon, wherever you are. This is Kirk Martin, America's Calm Coach and founder of Celebrate Calm. Thrilled that you're joining with us today. I have about 15 topics I want to get to in the next 60 minutes, so I think we're going to go ahead and jump into this. And I'm really happy that you're here with us. We're back home in Nashville now. We got 2 inches of snow, and so everything is shut down here. And I don't want to hear from all of you northern people. I know Casey has friends in Minnesota. And they're like, yeah, we got 17 inches of snow, but we didn't even miss school. And there's one difference you guys have up there. You guys have things called snow plows that we don't have down here. And so, but it's absolutely gorgeous. We've got hills down here and a little bit of snow. The dogs love it. And so we're just kind of inside today and thought we'd do this radio show. Haven't been on the air in a couple weeks. Casey and I were on the road for 10 straight days in Texas. And we made a choice that we would not put too much on our plate while we were traveling so we could actually enjoy each other's company. We could get out and experience some of the beautiful scenery and really great people in the state of Texas. So we took a couple weeks off, and we're going to be talking a lot more about that in the upcoming months, about courageous parenting, about making choices and saying no to certain things and saying, you know what, we're just not going to do it, because relationships come before getting stuff done and the busy lifestyle that we have. So let me go ahead and jump in a couple insights I wanted to share with you. Some things I began sharing at the workshops in Texas, and we do try to mix things up. We have so much content. I think we're up to about 22 hours worth of content now. And at the workshops, we're trying to mix some things up and add things, new insights in. So here's a good one to think about during this kind of reflective time of year and celebratory time of year. Think about this. The things, the qualities inside your kids that tend to irritate you the most, usually these are also qualities that we as parents struggle with the most. So I see these things inside my child that he's struggling with, and why it irritates me so much, and then I always press to try to get rid of those qualities, is because often it's something I struggle with myself, and I don't want to see my child struggling with it. Sometimes it's because it really irritates it inside of me, and I want to be the only person in this family that's like that. I don't want my kid doing that as well. But here's another really good insight. Usually those qualities, usually in there is the seed of your child's future success. When we begin to see some of these qualities as positives instead of just negatives, that obstinance and strong will, we start to see that as persistence, and you get a child's vision and purpose and motivation all of a sudden. That's a great quality to have. So start thinking about that and how you can turn what you see as a negative into a positive. A couple great suggestions before we get to the heavy questions. On Facebook, I asked a question, hey, what are your traditions around Hanukkah and Christmas? And I really encourage you to join the Facebook page. It's completely free. You don't have to write anything. You won't get swamped with stuff all over. You just kind of join our fan page, and you go in there and check it out. And what I love about it is it's everyday parents who come up with great ideas and share those tips. We'll share tips every day that try to make your life less stressful. And one of the great tips was, a lady said for Hanukkah now, she's hiding some of the gifts. We're big fans of treasure hunts because it gets kids moving and active. It gives them a very purposeful project and mission to focus on. It lets them use their problem-solving skills. So we encourage people Christmas morning, because you know how it goes. it's a mad rush of opening all the gifts, and then it's done, and you sit there and look like, uh-oh, now the kids are going to play with something for a couple hours and be bored. So spread it out a little bit. Now, Santa's gifts, whatever your tradition is, you know, Santa has to leave it under the tree, but the gifts from mom and dad, who says they can't be out in the backyard? Even if there's snow out, make it more difficult. Have them get all their snow stuff on and have to go outside and dig around for gifts outside and then bring them back in. What a great way to start the morning, get some of that energy out and get them outside, maybe looking for some of the gifts, kind of like, you know, those of you who do Easter egg hunts. So here's a question, great question from Charlottesville, Virginia. We had just been there, and a lady said, hey, I attended your talk in Charlottesville. I'm working my way through your CDs. And here's a question kind of related to your last newsletter, which is, hey, when your kids are upset, well, go and start doing a different activity. Lead them into your calm. Well, what if your child doesn't join you? What if you go and you sit down and you're playing Legos and they don't join you and they just choose to continue being kind of upset? In those cases, I continue playing with my Legos. I continue to create the calm where I am. If they continue to fume, they can make that choice. I'm fine with kids making choices as long as they know there's a consequence for it. A lot of times the consequence is not just something negative like getting sent to their room or having a video games taken away. Sometimes the consequence is, well, you just don't get what you're trying to get through your tantrum and through your manipulation. Now, in the newsletter on Tuesday, I'm going to talk about an idea around consequences, because for many of our kids, consequences don't even really matter. And what's a better way? Where should we be focusing our energy on this? Is it just the consequence, which is kind of a reactive mode, or is it spending more time teaching kids how to control their emotions in the first place and deal with their disappointment and their anxiety proactively? So in this case, I go do it. Do whatever is calming to you. Draw them into that. One of the examples we use, and I've had a lot of families do this, child goes up, slams the door of their bedroom. Mom or dad says, hey, get that you're upset. If you want to talk to me, I'm going to be outside throwing the ball up against the wall, throwing the ball up in the air. If you want to play catch, I'll be outside. So mom or dad, you go outside, and you start throwing the ball around, throw it against the wall, do something calming. Eventually, they will come to you. You just need to be patient, and you just need to enjoy your time. If it's something you do as a couple, that's even better. I've had a lot of success lately with people saying, you know what, my kids are upset. You know what I did? We went in and we started playing a board game on the living room floor. And before you know it, my kids were in there saying, what are you guys doing? What are you guys doing? They are drawn to us when we are calm and when we're available. So be patient with it. It's also a matter of changing habits. For the first, 7, 10 years of your child's life, every time they were upset, we got upset and we yelled and we created a big scene and they created a big scene. And so it's changing behavior, and sometimes that takes a little while, but just keep being consistent and things will work really well. The same mom said, one tactic you taught at the workshop, which is focusing on the process and not on perfection, has already made a huge difference in my relationship with my daughter. As the son of a military brat, which I am as well, my dad's expectations for perfection were high. 95% wasn't good enough, and his way was the only way. But I've been praising my daughter for the partial tasks. I've been kind of overlooking the missing parts and just praise, and I've had less stress. I get upset a lot less. And so, like this mom says, it's baby steps. But here's what she said, which is key. Thank you for helping me break that cycle and bolster my child's self-esteem. And that's what we're so much about, is breaking cycles and patterns and traditions of behavior that many of us inherited from our moms and dads, and bolstering a child's self-esteem instead of just destroying it. So good for you, mom. Keep up the good work there. Mom named Christina writes, and this is very common, she's got a very bright 7-year-old, and is just having trouble with her daughter. I mean, he's a strong-willed kid, and here was my insight into what she had written, because her question, forgive me for this, I have a lot of questions, I'm trying to go through them on email, I've got them written out on the paper here, but I want to give as much context as I can. But child 7 years old, too smart for school, jumped to third grade, can't transition to save his life, but he's also hysterically funny, big-hearted, sharp as a tack, and this mom's words, won't take crap, not even from grown-ups. And forgive me for the language if that offends you, but, you know, we're kind of real world here. I like kids who are like that. And so let me give you some insight into kids like this. They are like adults trapped in kids' bodies. They do extremely well in the adult world. The idea of they won't take crap, not even from grown-ups, here's a really good insight. These kids, I believe, and most of our kids, I treat them like adults. I do. I don't talk to them like they're little children, and I don't patronize them. When you have a 7-year-old who's like this, you have to call their bluff. You need to talk to them in calm, even tone, in a matter-of-fact tone. When they start coming after you, if you respond with emotion and you even shrug your shoulders and you say, "Oh, why do you always," as soon as that comes out of your mouth, the child, the 7-year-old knows he's going to own you. You have to be able to look him straight in the eyes and say, "Hey, pal, listen, I get that you're smart. I understand what you're trying to do here. I understand this kind of manipulative, what you're trying to do to me. I know you're trying to suck me into an argument. I'm not going there. Now, if you want to come talk to me in the living room and problem solve about some way that we can solve this issue rather than you whining, complaining, demanding, trying to manipulate me, getting me into an argument, I'm all ears and I'm all in with you, pal. But if you're just going to go down this route and try to wear me down, not happening, not ever, good luck." And it's a way to call their bluff. And I'll tell you, with these kids, you have to practice it. You have to be able to do it and know that you're not moved, because he's going to keep trying and he's going to keep pushing. These kind of kids will keep pushing because that's their job. Until they look and they see an adult who is able to sit down and sit with his legs crossed and be relaxed and look them in the eyes and say, "No matter what you do, you do not move me. I'm in control of myself. I'm the adult. I'm the leader of the home. Therefore, this is a safe place for you." Because up until now, you've been operating under the assumption that you're in control of this home, because all you have to do is start in on me, and I tend to give a lecture, or I throw my hands up in the air, or I react emotionally, and that sends the message that you're in control of me, and that makes you uneasy, and that sets you on edge because you're not equipped to be in control, but I am because I'm the adult. Now, I don't know how this translates on the radio show and listening to this, but I hope for many of you that you can listen to that and understand and kind of picture this and see you're not always saying that to your child verbally, but you're saying that through your actions. You're saying it through the way that you approach them, which is, "I'm in control here, not by making you do things, but by the very fact of that I can control myself." And that sends such a message of stability to kids, to let them know, "Phew, I didn't know that you were in such control of yourself." It is a great deal of comfort to these strong-willed kids to know that their parent has, in a sense, even a stronger will and can't be moved. So with this kid, let me share another insight with you. Don't be afraid to put them in adult situations, safe adult situations, but nevertheless, adult responsibilities, adult situations, service projects. We will think with these kids, "But they're too young to be down at the homeless shelter." Well, you have to determine what's too young, and you know your child, but most of these kids, they thrive in situations like that. But Casey, I think he was probably 7 or 8 when we started taking him to this one homeless shelter, and you know what he really liked doing? He was a little bit afraid at that age of always being around and kind of serving meals to the people. But you know what he liked? at this particular one, there was a place in the back where you could see out into the lunchroom, and you could see kind of the homeless people not serving. But his job was to rinse off and put the dishes in the dishwasher, something to this day he's not real fond of at home, but he loved it at the homeless shelter. When Casey was, I believe he was 9 years old, he was really into hockey, and we ended up meeting these people, and he got a volunteer job just being a stick boy, kind of like a bat boy in baseball, but being a stick boy for this minor league hockey club. And I remember really distinctly dropping him off at an arena. It was a big arena. It held like 12,000 people. And I drop him off. And it was after I got to know some people, so I made sure it was safe and everything. But I drop him off and say, hey, have a good day at work. And, you know, he would go in there, and I'd leave him all day long. And you're a little bit afraid of like, man, this is a big thing to negotiate. But he was great at it, because I'd go to the games like later that night, and I talked to the ushers and people who worked at the arena, and they'd be like, Casey, he's an amazing kid. He's the best stick boy we've ever had. We can just, you know, we tell him to do something, he's all over it. He does it really well. And I know your response to this is the same as mine, which is, seriously, because he's not that way at home. But look for opportunities for these kids, because it's such a confidence builder, and you'll get to see, it builds your confidence to know, hey, at home, not always great, but in the real world, my child is just going to be excellent at these things. Here's another question that we received, but it brought up an insight. And I talked to a teenage boy at a workshop in Plano, Texas. The last one we did last Tuesday night, he stuck around for the workshop, came up afterwards and talked to me. And here's some insight. Many of our kids, like this young boy, he's a really neat kid. They're very sensitive. They're super sensitive to the thing. They have hypersensitive feelings and sensory responses. And sometimes they're hypersensitive, like in their senses, like visually, or loud noises bother them, which I struggle with. I don't like bright lights. I don't like loud noises. I'm very sensitive to smell. Everything's very heightened to me. I'm very sensitive to feelings, to how if people are struggling. Things just kind of hit me kind of hard. Well, a lot of people that are like this misperceive things. We perceive wrongs when people aren't really doing something to us. And this particular teenager said, my teacher just has it in for me. And what we got to at the end of the day was, as teachers a little bit probably negative, and people like us don't respond well to negative people, we tend to shut down. But he just misperceived it sometimes. Sometimes she was just being tough on him and just being firm, and he took it as, well, she doesn't like me. And that's a pretty common thing with your kids. So when they come home and say, oh, well, she's just being mean to me, sit down with them and draw it out and say, and help your kids distinguish, are they being mean to you, or is it just you didn't like the tone? Maybe you were misperceiving it. Because in this case, what we came up with, this teenager is going to go in and talk to his teacher and say, hey, you know what, I talk to his teacher and say, hey, I don't want to be in trouble in your class all the time. I want to get along with you well. Here's some things, maybe some misperceptions I have that you have about me, and can we start with a clean slate? And I love that approach going in. And a teenager doing it, that's an awesome thing. But with these super sensitive kids, be aware of that things hit them. Things, oftentimes these are the quiet kids. Like some of you have kids, they were just in your face, in your face, in your face, argue, argue, argue. Some of your kids are just loud. They don't stop talking at all. They hum, they sing, always making a noise. And then some of you have the kids who, when something happens, they'll retreat a little bit into themselves. I've got some argumentative sides to me. I like to fight a bit, but I tend to be more of a reflective type person. And when something hits me, I tend to withdraw and I become very quiet. And that's why when we get home from our trips, it's usually 2 to 3 days before I really kind of become back to myself and talking and interacting and emotionally engaged. Because when I'm on the road, you know, sometimes it's 200, 300 people in a night where we're working with, and then you know, sometimes after a workshop then there's 10, 15 people, 20 people lined up, and you talk to them and I'm just drained. And after those, I need my alone time to kind of recharge. And many of you have kids like this, so give them their space, but then go in and sit with them and say, hey, what hit you so hard there? What are you thinking about? And if you do that in a way that allows them space to open up and the time to open up, you'll find these kids, they're your great poets, screenplay writers, musicians. They like to write. They're very creative. Really neat kids, but it takes time to kind of enter into their world. And you want to find out what's bugging them and find out ways and say, hey, you know what? I think maybe what this person said to you, maybe what they really meant, do you think they may have meant this, but you took it this way? And usually upon reflection, they'll come up with that. And we just need to teach people like that. And I need to learn this. You know, certain people have different ways of dealing with other people, and it's not always the way it seems. So that's kind of the approach that I would take. Here's a great question. This is from one of my favorite moms, and you know who you are, in Indianapolis. And this is a question from a while ago, and I just found it and wanted to get back to her on this. But she's asking, when is my teenager, my child, going to get that fire in his belly? And this question, the term that the mom used, and this is fun part for me, sometimes you can tell what the parents and what the real issue is by listening to the parents' words that they use. And when a mom asks, like, when is my child going to get that fire in his belly, that internal motivation to really take ownership and take charge, usually that tells me I'm working with a pretty intense mom herself or dad himself, because they're all about the fire in their belly. Well, what this tells me is, mom, you have that fire in your belly, and I know from meeting you, you've got that. And the dad, in this case, I believe, has that fire in his belly. These are both professional people. They're very motivated, probably a little bit type A kind of people. I'm very much like that. And here's a couple insights and strategies for you. When you have a child and you're like this, you're going to be looking like, when are they going to get that passion and that zeal and that fight to go out and conquer the world and to find their way and be motivated to do their homework and go to college and pursue their passion? I would just tell you a few things. One is, they will not get the fire in their belly on your timetable. And that is the biggest issue in this case is, mom, dad, you have to relax. This is not about you. It is not about when you want it to happen. It's not about your comfort. It's not about alleviating your anxiety over whether they're going to be successful in life. It's not. It's not about you. It's about the child. And here's when they will get their fire in the belly. One, when they're darn ready to get it. And two, most likely when we start relaxing as parents and get off their backs. Because as often, every time I press and press and press a child, and we come up with, as adults, we come up with different ways to phrase it and say, well, I'm really not putting pressure on them. I'm really not. I'm just encouraging them. No, that's pressure. And you know what you're doing. And I know this because I did it. And before I got to this whole calm thing and began really encouraging Casey in a real way and modeling it, I found every way to get around this and say, oh, tell my wife, you know, honey, I'm not putting pressure on him. I'm just encouraging him. I'm just showing him a different way. And in every case, it was my anxiety. When is this kid going to get off his video games and start doing it? Because I see so much potential in this child, and I know they can do it, but they're not. And I'll just tell you, as soon as you relax, you will begin seeing your child step up. The principle is, when you begin to step back, your child will step up. But, and I know this, mom, because we stayed after a workshop last time. I know when it was, after the Jewish, when we were at the Jewish synagogue. Casey and I stayed out on the front steps of the synagogue and talked to this mom for a long time. And what struck me, and I love this mom, so don't take this as criticism, is, she's so intense and wants so badly for her son to be successful, and she sees it in him, and I can see it in him too. And I told this child, and all of your kids out there, these kids that I meet, if they were stock, like if they were stocks that I could buy, I'd buy stock in them for the long term. These are long-term kids that are going to be extremely successful. But, mom, relax. model it. You're showing through your modeling what your husband does, your family, how to be successful in life. Back off. Praise every partial step your son takes, because that will encourage him to keep going. Back off. Your son's going to be fine. He'll get that fire in his belly when he's ready. Keep exposing him to positive situations, adult opportunities, responsibilities where he can use his gifts and his passions, and he'll be fine. But I hope for this particular mom, many of you can relate to that. And this is why we need dads. To be quite honest, I'm going to address dads on Thursday's newsletter. I really need dads at the workshops. I need dads listening to the CDs. We created that on the Defiance and Disrespect CDs. There's a CD we recorded just for dads. And I feel very passionately about this. Dads especially get all into this, like, I got to get my son to be motivated. He's got to step up to the plate. And we just press and press, and we destroy our relationships with our sons and our daughters. And they need us. Dads, they need us. But we have to get control of our own anxiety, and we have to start doing more modeling and less lecturing and a lot more praising, and we will see our kids step up and be extraordinarily successful. Casey talks with me on that CD. If you do not have it, I encourage you, reach out to us. We have an end-of-year clearance sale going on because the supplier of our CDs wants to, honestly, they want to push as much income into 2010 as they can. And so they came to us and said, hey, if you can reorder each of these sets before the end of 2010, we can give you a big price break on these sets that you're ordering just to get this income into 2010. So what we thought is, well, what a great opportunity. We'll go ahead and pass along the savings to you guys. And so if you don't have the CDs, there's no better time to get them. Get them as a Christmas gift, a Hanukkah gift, not even as a gift, just a gift to your family. I wish I could read. I have in front of me a testimonials little file on my computer. And every day you just get all these testimonials, and I wish I could read them all, but it's the testimonies. I got the CDs, and there's so many practical, concrete strategies, and I'm seeing so many wins and such a change in our relationship. So reach out to us. We'll help you out financially however you need, but you got to make the investment in them. Okay, here's a good question. What do I do with my kids when they're in the backseat of the car and they're fighting and they're being loud? I can't always pull over the car. It's not always safe to do it. We don't always have time to do it. You know, I can't do it the way my dad did it. My dad was, he did the thing where he just kind of like, you know, took his backhand and then like swatted us, you know, from while he was driving 90 miles per hour and, you know, made us be quiet and yelled at us and all that. I don't want to do that. You can't do that. So let me give you one strategy that you can use. And I like this because it's not expedient. It's a long-term strategy, and it gets your kids to start owning their choices instead of me just making you stop because you're really irritating. And here's how it goes. And I've done this with tons of kids. We've done this multiple times. I often had 6, 8, 10 kids in our SUV, taking them around during camp time. And here's the approach. 2, 3 kids in the back seat. They're starting to get loud. They're yelling. Of course, you can tell them, hey, guys, I need you to be quiet. They're not going to listen to you sometimes. They're just going to push and push because they know, Mom, you can't do anything right now. So here's what I might say. Hey, guys, and I may turn the radio up, I may turn it down, I may honk a couple times, whatever it is, I get their attention, and I say, guys, you know what, just need a quick little break in between the fighting here. Here's what I want you to know. You all have a choice to make right now. You've got a choice. You can continue to yell and scream in the fight in the car, because the truth is they can continue, because when we tell them you can't do that, it's a lie. Because they can do it because they just did it. They just can't do it without a what? A consequence. Now, here's where I say, guys, you can continue to do that if you want, but I want to let you know what the consequences of that choice are, because you have two choices. And here's my promise to you. I promise if you all kind of settle down, and maybe you guys kind of help me out, because I need, Zachary, I need you to look for exit 34, because we got to get off of there. Susie, I need you to keep an eye, look out for cops. Make sure there's no cops here because I'm pushing a little bit here. So you look out for cops. And then, Jonathan, I need your help as well because I need you to start thinking about what are we going to have for dinner tonight? How can you help me out with dinner tonight? I give them some things to do to focus their energy on helping me out and on doing something constructive instead of just being bored and fighting with each other. But here's the deal, guys. You have a choice to make. I promise if you help me out and if you quiet down, I promise when we get home tonight and you're watching your favorite TV show or video, I promise you get the full 30 minutes and it'll be quiet and it'll be great and you guys can do it. I also promise you this, though. If you continue to yell and scream in the car, I promise you, the next time you're watching your favorite movie or TV show, I'm going to walk into the living room calmly, and I'm going to bring in some pots and pans, and I'm going to bang. And I'm going to bang for about 7.5 minutes. Or you know what I'll do? I'll keep track of how many minutes that you all are loud in the car, and then for those same amount of minutes, while you're watching your favorite TV show, I will then bang those pots and pans. Now, I'm going to have earbuds in and headphones on, so I'm not even going to hear it. But I imagine you will find that rather irritating, won't you? So, up to you. I'd like you to take about, let's take about 37 seconds. Let's take until I get to the next exit. And you think about it, and you let me know what your choice is. And if you want to be loud in the car, you have at it. But I just want to remind you of what the consequence is. And then I leave it at that. Now, many of the kids, if they're like our kids, they're going to test you. And after a couple minutes, they're going to go back to being loud. And you know what? Let them do it. No lectures. Just grip the steering wheel. You know, just create a little rhythm in your head. Put some music on. Try to focus on the music instead of their fighting. And let them own their choices. And then when you get home later, you can have a devilish little grin on your face, but you are not to lecture. They're in watching their favorite TV show or their favorite little video, playing video games, and you will walk in with your pots and pans with a nice little smile on your face. You do not have to lecture. You don't have to say, you know what, I warned you guys. No justification at all. You walk in, and with a pleasant look on your face, you just begin banging your pots and pans, and you keep going, and they will throw a massive tantrum, and they will be really upset and say that it's not fair, and you're the meanest mother in the world, and you can let them know. You can put that on a coffee mug and give that to you for Mother's Day next year or for Christmas this year, but they made the choice, okay? And you can take a little break from banging and say, hey, this has nothing to do with me and everything to do with the choice that you made in the car this afternoon to yell. You kept doing it for 23 minutes, so you have 23 minutes of pots and pans while your favorite show is on. Now, they will. You go back and forth with it. You start banging the pots and pans again. You may stop the first time if you want. You can say, hey, here's the deal. You guys continued on for 23 minutes. I'm going to show you some mercy. And I'm going to stop right now. Because I know you've missed a few minutes of your show, but I wanted to let you know, from now on, you all are responsible for your choices. You're responsible for the consequences. And next time we are in the car and you start getting loud, I'm going to give you one warning, but all I'm going to say is this. Pots and pans. And let me know how that works, because you start doing some of these things and the kids know they own their choices. I love doing that. I love doing it a few times until they start to learn. You cannot move me. I am in control of myself. I'm not going to lecture you, but you're going to own your choices. So give that a shot and let's see how that goes. Okay, here's another good question. I need to look this up. It's on lying. Kirk, I'm really, and this is an all caps, you can tell a really frustrated parent because there's lots of caps in this. For the third time, our son has lied to me and my husband. He doesn't own up to anything he does until we prove him wrong. We already have the proof. We want an opportunity to come forward, tell the truth. We sat down, calmly discussed. He denied anything happened. How do we get him to trust us and tell the truth? How can other parents and our kids get their kids to own up to their mistakes and move on? And we can't. How can we let him know that lying gets you nowhere? And here's a couple things about this question. One is very telling. How can other parents get their kids to own up to their mistakes and move on? And we can't. And in there is a little bit of the, hey, what are we doing wrong here? Like, what are we doing something wrong? And the answer is probably not. Probably you're not doing anything wrong. It's just that your child is choosing to lie. And we'll get to that in a second. But you have to, if you're parenting one of these kids, any of these kids, we have to get past comparing. We can't compare to what other kids, what other parents do. We have to deal with the cards that we're dealt. And don't worry about that. Otherwise, you're going to put pressure on yourself, and inadvertently, you're going to put pressure on their kid, because you say, you know what, all of our friends' kids, they don't lie, they don't do the mistakes, and you can't, blah, 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 and you get all that. But here's the key question. How can we let him know that lying gets you nowhere? You know what the real answer to that question is? This. Your son already knows that lying gets him nowhere. He knows it. He knows innately that lying is wrong. Human beings know that it's wrong. We all know that. He knows that because in your home you've told him 5,000 times that lying, stealing, cheating is wrong. We know that, and he knows that. The real issue isn't the lying here, and it's not going to be. And I know the real question here is anxiety. Like, well, if he doesn't understand the lying, he's going to grow up and he's going to lie to everybody, and nobody's going to trust him, and he's going to live this horrible, horrible life. And you know what? He'll stop lying. Okay, there's something else going on under here that the lie is the cover-up. And usually, and I can't say in this particular instance, but see if this makes sense. I'm a little kid, big kid. I do something. I make a wrong choice. I make a bad decision. I'm impulsive. I make a bad choice. Now, I've messed up. Now, I'm afraid. I'm embarrassed. Sometimes I'm angry at myself. Sometimes I'm frustrated at myself. Sometimes I feel like a loser. Sometimes I feel like, man, I'm a loser. I'm a jerk. I'm a bad kid. So what's my natural instinct? My natural instinct, and my natural instinct at 44 still, you know, and we're all working on it, is to what? Cover things up, not admit that I'm wrong. It's to hope that it goes away, or to lie. This is nothing new. Whether you believe in the biblical account or not, it's interesting that in one of the oldest pieces of literature that we have on earth, in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, one of the first interactions that we have in human history and literature of human interaction and interaction with the Creator is what Adam does, and he lies. I mean, and obviously he had to know, hey, Adam, what happened to the tree and the fruit? I don't know, right? His first instinct. So my point of saying that is to say this is one of the oldest human behaviors and instincts. There is self-preservation, and that's the real issue. So I would relax with this. I wouldn't. I would look for and see if this makes sense. When you get tomorrow's newsletter, or some of you are going to be listening tomorrow or after the newsletter on consequences and meltdowns, the real issue isn't the lying. Here's what I want to get to. What's causing your child to mess up? What's he having impulse control with? Why does he keep making bad decisions which end up causing him, in a way, and he's still responsible for this, causing him to lie and cover up in the first place? That's what I really want to get to. So you want to kind of do something really cool with your son. You know, instead of it being, in this case, I wouldn't do mom and dad sitting down with him, because he's already kind of defensive over his own cover-up and actions. Now it's this two against one thing. And so it's either mom or dad. You're doing something, playing catch with him, having a good time, eating a snack, and saying, hey, you know what? I got some insight here, and I wanted to talk to you about something. I don't want you being defensive. I want to help you out with something, because here's the deal. We know you've kind of been covering up some things, and you lied about a couple things, okay? So we know that. That's a statement of fact. You don't have to get defensive. Don't have to lie more to cover. We know that, okay? And we know that you know that's wrong. And here's what I want to help you out with. And you know what? I have to say, as I'm saying this, My eyes are tearing up a little bit, and that's usually a sign that I'm getting to something kind of emotional and really deep. And here's why. Think about this. And if I end up missing some of these other questions, I don't care, because this is really good. And this insight will be good for lots of different situations. Watch how, in this case, we're concerned with the outward behavior. We're concerned with the lying, and it's our anxiety because we know if a child lies, he's going to grow up lying, and that's going to cause all kinds of issues. But you know what the real issue is? The real issue is, and we want our child to fess up. He just needs to own up, and he does. But watch how cool this is. You know what I really see now as I'm picturing this? What I'm picturing is a little boy or a teenage boy who needs help, who is, in a way, hurting, who's frustrated, who inside, he knows lying is wrong. You know, it's eating him up because he's spending a lot of emotional energy trying to come up with all his different excuses and trying to backtrack and trying to cover this up. That doesn't feel good inside. So what if you come to him and say, hey, that's a side issue here. We know you know it's wrong. Okay, no problem with that. Here's what I want to help you with, Jonathan. You know what? I know when you start lying, it doesn't feel good inside. I know that because you know what? I was a kid once, and I used to do the same thing. It doesn't feel good inside. And so I want to help you because I know that doesn't feel good. And you know what? You're such a bright kid, and you've got all these gifts and passions and creativity, and I want your energy being spent on that, not figuring out how you can cover some things up. But you know what? I want to go a step deeper with you. The reason that you felt the need to lie is because maybe you're struggling with something, so there's some behavior that's kind of tripping you up. Like you're being impulsive, and like you see something maybe that your sister has and that you really wanted, and instead of asking for it, you went and you took it, and then you ended up having to lie about it, and you're creating this whole ugly cycle. And you know what, Jonathan? That doesn't feel good inside, does it? And he may not answer, but you know what you're doing? You're connecting with him deep inside, and now he knows, oh, now they're on to me, not to get me, but to help me. Because my tone is this, hey, bud, here's the deal. I want to help you with this because, you know what, this has been awful. Like, you've been covering this up the first week. That must be awful for you because I know how bad that feels inside. And you know what's even worse than that is feeling like you need to cover things up and that you need to lie about something. And so here's what I want to help you with. What are you struggling with? Like, what behavior are you struggling with that you get impulsive and then you do it, and then you know you're going to get in trouble, so you cover it up? How can we start reacting in a different way? How can I help you? What is it? How can we come up with a new tradition? Can we come up with a new behavior so that every time you feel tempted to take something of your sister's, instead of doing that, we do this? What's something positive we can do instead of that? Because then we can start to change your behavior, and then you know what? Now you're not taking things from your sister. Then you're not having to lie and cover that up. Now you're not feeling icky inside for the rest of the week. And so that would be better, wouldn't it? So what do you want to come up with? And then here's the second thing I want to get to. Some of you will need to do this. Some of you won't. Some of you, your kids can't come to you, and they're afraid when they do something wrong that you're going to overreact and freak out on them. So here are my options as a kid. I just took something. I made a wrong choice. I broke something in the house. If I go and tell my parents, they're going to freak out on me, and they're going to lecture and yell, and I don't want to put up with that, so I'm going to cover it up and lie. So for some of you, the second part of this might be, Jonathan, you know what? You know what? It struck me also, maybe the reason that you're lying and covering up is that you don't feel comfortable coming to me and telling me that you messed up. Because when you've done that in the past, are there times when I've kind of overreacted? Or are you afraid of my reaction? If you can get your child to open up there and say, Mom, when I go and tell you guys, Dad freaks out, and he does this thing where he just shakes his head at me and he walks away grumbling and saying, like I'm a loser and, like, I'm never going to be successful unless, and, like,
I don't like that. And if you find that out, now you come up with a new family tradition. What's our new tradition? When our child does something wrong and messes up, maybe we have a certain part of the house that we go to. Maybe we have a certain code word, which is confession time, if that's a positive connotation for any of you who are religious. I'm not Catholic, but for a lot of Catholic people, confession time is a positive thing, and so it's time where you unload your burdens, and it's a non-judgmental time where you get forgiveness, and hopefully you find some help so that you don't keep repeating that. For some of you, it might be something else. It might be popcorn, and every time your child needs to fess up to something, they say popcorn, and as a family, you pop some popcorn, and you sit down and eat popcorn, and you give your child a way, because you're all sitting down, and it's non-judgmental time, and when your child's allowed to say, hey, Mom and Dad, here's what I wanted you to know. 3 days ago when you guys went out, I broke the lamp in the basement. And we start to practice as a family how to handle that, and Dad says, you know what? I'm proud of you for telling me, so... What's our response to that? What do you think should be the consequence of that? And come into problem-solving mode and say, can we fix the lamp? No, apparently we can't. It's beyond fixing. Was it truly an accident? Because sometimes accidents happen, right? And so we have like Allstate accident forgiveness. Or were you being irresponsible and doing something? Mom and I have a rule. No, playing with balls in the house, and you play with the balls in the house. The lamp got broken. I'm not upset at you, but there is a consequence for it, which is we need to replace that lamp. That lamp happened to cost $85. So let me know. What's our plan? What's our plan? What are some extra chores you're going to do to end up paying for that? I might have some jobs to do that you could help me out with, that you could earn some extra money. Or maybe we go into entrepreneur mode, and maybe this weekend, can you walk some dogs in the neighborhood? Can you wash cars? Can you cut grass? Can you do something? And you know, here's what I'm going to do so that we can turn this into a real positive son. I'll tell you what we're going to do. You get out this coming weekend, and you find a way to earn some money. You help neighbors out. You do whatever you can. And here's what's going to happen. I will match every dollar that you earn and give you an incentive. Or if you can earn $40, I'll chip in the other $40, and we'll pay off, and we'll go get a new lamp for Mom. How about that? Now, however you want to massage that and do that, watch what we've done. And I have to say, I love this example, and I missed a whole bunch of stuff that we're not going to get to, but apply this to all the different situations that you're struggling with in your home, and look what we've done now. We created a conversation. We created an atmosphere and a new tradition now where anyone in the family who messes up can now come. And I just thought of this off the top of my head, so the popcorn thing may be a stupid idea. Come up with it. What's a fun thing that you do? Maybe if you're like a football family, you have family huddle, and anyone at any time can come and say, we need to huddle. And no matter what anybody is doing at the time, you put everything down, and you go to the kitchen, and you get in a huddle like a football team, and this can be a child saying, I have to tell you, I just messed up. I lied. I need some help with this situation. Or they messed up with some behavior at school, and they get to come to the huddle, and the huddle, if you think, I love this idea of the huddle, because now you've got, if you picture everybody, arms around each other, you're a team, you're working on something, just like a football team has a common goal of we have to go down and we have to score a touchdown, and we have to all work together to do it, not point fingers at each other. How about if the dad came in, or the mom came in to the huddle, and as long as it's appropriate, came in and said, hey, you know what? I have to say, I need some help with something because I was in this situation at work, and it was a tough situation, and I kind of told a little white lie to my boss, try to get out of something, buy me time. What do you think I ought to do, kids? What do you think I should do? Or maybe it's as simple as it's not a work situation, but a dad comes in, says, huddle, and says, you know what? I just want to let you guys know, when I came in the house tonight, I was really anxious and I was overwhelmed and I was kind of in kind of a mood. You know what? I snapped at Jason and I snapped it at your mom, and I want to apologize to you guys for snapping at you. And you know what? I can hear this. My voice is kind of quivering a little bit because that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. When you get a dad or a mom, but especially a dad coming in, and I know in the past when I have apologized to Casey and to my wife, it does something. It is a powerful, powerful thing. And you get the dad saying, I want to apologize to you guys because when I came in the house, I snapped at you. And Jacob, I want to let you know, I'm not mad at you. It was my own anxiety, and I'm sorry I snapped at you. And you know what you're going to have? You're going to have kids who look at their parents and say, I've got honest parents who have integrity and who don't hide behind their being the authority in the home, of they don't do anything wrong. But I've got parents who model it. When they mess up, they tell us and they apologize. And I get kids helping their parents because all the times I've ever done that, you know what Casey's response has been? It's okay, Dad. I understand. And I have to tell them, say, you know what? I appreciate that. It wasn't okay for me to do that, but I do appreciate you forgiving me. Next time, here's what I want to do differently, and here's how we can work together as a family. That's just a cool thing. So I hope you found that helpful. I want to get to a question here about some parenting conflict because it kind of leads right into this one. And it's a situation where this mom and dad have a little girl, and she has some medical issues, and I may not be getting this perfectly right, but she has to take this medication, and she's almost five. She starts they have to wash out her sinuses with a syringe and salt water. Okay, horrible, right? Who wants to go through that? And so the child, I mean, obviously she doesn't like it, and she'll start crying and shaking, and she's begging, and she negotiates hours before we even plan to do it. And, the husband gets really upset while we're trying to do it, and he tries to force her to stay still, and I'm afraid he's going to hurt her. And then last night, the husband decided to spank the child so that she'd, you know, obey and everything and get this over with. And so the question is, well, how do we handle this? So a few things here, and I'm going to speak very directly with this. One is I put myself in the shoes of the five-year-old who's having to do this. This is a nasty thing. I mean, there is no way to make this pleasant, right? No way at all. But here's the real truth, and even if this isn't your situation, see if this doesn't ring true. And today's kind of a tough day. I'm really hitting on a lot of the parent stuff, but the beauty of our approach is really it has very little to do with the kids and it has so much to do with me. I control so much of what goes on around me by how I act. I influence people's behavior. And in some ways, yeah, I can kind of control their reactions and influence it by the way that I act. I can calm down virtually any situation, not by telling someone else what to do, but by controlling myself. And this is at the post office, at a store, when I'm returning things, if I have to call for customer service, no matter where I am, I control so much by controlling myself. And here's the main point I wanted to get across. In this situation, in all honesty, the dad is just a needy, needy person. And if the dad's listening to this, I want you to know, I understand this is a horrible situation, and it's not fun. Listening to a girl scream and cry and having to put a syringe up her nose and shoot this salt into it and clean it out is nasty, and it's not fun. And I know it would go easier if she would just walk into a room and calmly lay down and submit herself to you so you could do this. But that's unreasonable. And the real issue here is that the dad is expecting things of his daughter that he will not do himself. His daughter is the one who's having to have this nasty stuff shot up her nose and to take this treatment. The dad just has to put up with the screaming and all the yelling and all of that. And it's hard, I know. But the fact is the dad in this case is asking the girl to do something that he won't do, which is put up with an unpleasant situation in a calm way. He's asking the daughter, you control and behave yourself because I can't. Because if you don't lay here and take this treatment the right way, I'm going to lose it. And so the spanking is not about some kind of discipline for the child. This is not for the child. It is an immature response from a dad who has not learned how to control himself. And I understand that because I lived
the first 30-some years of my life like that and the first 9 years of Casey's life. So I'm not being judgmental and harsh. I'm speaking the truth so that you will listen and so you'll step up and you'll be encouraged to say, no, why am I doing this to my kid? Here's what I would rather see. When this situation is about to happen, obviously, mom and dad, you're getting really uptight because you know it's coming. And that anxiety is now feeding and spilling all over to your daughter, which is causing her to get more upset. And the more upset she gets upset now, the more visibly upset dad gets. And you can hear it in the tone of voice. And when your tone of voice becomes, and it's like, you know what, I know this is tough, daughter, but I need you to sit. As soon as we get in that mode, no matter when it is, and we get short with our kids, and we get kind of in this tone, it just dumps fuel and negative emotional energy all over the situation, and it always, always, always causes things to get worse. So I don't have a way for you to create a really pleasant, enjoyable experience here. It's going to be ugly, but here's my challenge for you. Mom, Dad, what can you do that no matter how awful it is for your daughter, you remain calm and you remain the rock that the scared little girl needs so that as she's going through this nasty treatment, she looks up and she sees, and again, I don't know why I'm so emotional today, but she looks up and instead she sees in her father's eyes a couple of tears for her, okay, of like, honey, I get it. This is hard. And she sees some tears or compassion in dad's eyes of, yeah, I wish you didn't have to go with it, but you know what? I'm going to hold you in my arms. I'm going to put my big hands are not going to be here spanking you. My big hands are going to be here holding you. Here, hold on to my hands while you're experiencing this. And here's what I would tell you. Maybe there is a way that you can create a distraction. I don't know how long this takes, 15 seconds, 45 seconds. What if we say to the daughter this? Hey, here's the deal, and here's what I would actually say. I want to apologize to you because I know you don't like going through this in the past. I've been getting so upset because I don't want it to hurt for you, and I end up spanking you, and we end up yelling at you to do this. I'm sorry. Instead, let's come up with a way for this to try to get through this as quickly as possible. So here's the deal, honey. You got to do this. We have to do the treatment because you have to get better. You just do because this is for your good and helps you get better. So given that this is a given and we have to do it, how can we make this more pleasant? What can we do? In the 5 minutes before we do this, what's our family tradition? Do we want to go and get some exercise because will exercise actually help her be a little bit more calm after she does this? Can we go jump around together on the mini trampoline? Can we play a favorite board game together? Can we sit and hold you and have a snack together, do something fun? While we're doing this, where can we do the treatment? Can we do it in a different place in the house? Can we do it on blankets on the floor? Can we create a little fort where we do our treatment? Can we hang off the sofa upside down together and do it? Can we do it in a treehouse? Can we do it someplace fun? While we're doing, could we put our favorite song on? And maybe, just maybe, while we're doing it, we all sing together your favorite Hannah Montana song or your favorite Christmas song or your favorite Mickey Mouse song or your favorite Barney song or whatever you like, five-year-old girl. What's your favorite song? Maybe we sing it. Maybe we create a funny song that we just sing and we laugh about how horrible this is, but we use this instead of fighting it. Instead, we just get it's a given, so we make the most of it. And instead of allowing this situation, please hear this, think of every situation that you're struggling with, moms and dads and teachers. Instead of allowing to divide us and all of us being upset, how can we use this to bring this together? Because guess what? For the rest of this girl's life, she's going to experience some difficult situations. And if every time the reaction from the parents is, why can't you just, and is for us to freak out as parents, it's never going to go well. But what if we teach her from a young age, when you have difficult times, I want you to know you can come to me. It's the same lesson, isn't it, that we learned in that line. When you struggle and when you're going through a different situation, I'm your mom, I'm your dad, you can come to me, and I am here to help you through this and make it better. So we didn't get to much of anything, but I hope you found that helpful. I sure found it helpful for me. Please tune in, listen to the radio show anytime you want. Send in topics you want to address. Tell us. We have all of the stuff on the CDs. Take advantage of that. Join the Facebook page. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah, everyone. And we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.